Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, June 22nd. Today we're going to be talking about Mexico with our good friend Alan Wall. Excuse me for a minute. I had something there in my throat. Sorry about that. But I mentioned we're going to be chatting today with our friend Alan Wall. We're going to be talking about Mexico, U.S.-Mexico issues of the moment. Many of you know Alan from Mexico Data or MexiData.info. He also has his own blog at alanwall.info, and we have links to both of those in the show information. Before we get to Mexico, let me just remind you that I have a post at the American Thinker on Thursday where I talk about the election in Georgia, where the Republican beat the Democrat, and some of the lessons from that election. And one of them is that we better start taking polling data with a little bit of skepticism. It's not so much that the pollsters are bad. It's just that it's very difficult to take a poll in a country like this where nobody answers their phone, or at least if they don't know who's calling. A lot of people don't have landlines either. So polling has become a very difficult thing to do. And I've reached the point where I take polls with caution because I think they have a margin of error much greater than what they tell us. And we've seen that recently, not only the polls last year in November, but now the polls in Georgia, where the Democrat was ahead most of the time until Election Day. And I think this is something that, again, I simply say to you, take these polls with caution, because, frankly, we don't know about the sample, and it is very difficult to take a poll in this environment. Let me say hello to our friend Alan Wall. How are you, Alan?
Well, fine, thank you. I hope you're having a good summer.
Well, I am. I just had a little clash of allergy there right as the show started, so I apologize to you and to the audience for that. You're going to like this. You're going to like this, you being a fan of the Beatles. It was in June of 1970. That's a long time ago, 47 years ago, that The Long and Winding Road was number one. And that, of course, turned out to be their last single that they ever put out. There were a couple of other singles that were put out in the late 70s, but they were not new songs. They were just re-releases. But The Long and Winding Road was number one this month, and that was the end of the Beatles, Alan.
Yeah, that's a great song, and I like both the versions. You know that later they came out with another version, and without all the orchestration, but I like them both.
I do too. You're talking about what they call the naked version, which came out in a
Naked Let It Be.
The Naked Let It Be, which is actually a very good album. But anyway, I know you would get a kick out of that being a Beatles fan. Well, Alan, let's talk a little bit about Mexico, because I have a post. Hopefully it'll be out Friday, where I'm talking about Mexico and some of the problems that the country has right now, problems that we've talked about before. But the violence, for example, the month of May was horrible as far as violence. But my concern is, I mentioned in the article, that Mexico has sort of taken a back seat to a lot of everything else going on, whether it's North Korea, whether it's Russia, whether it's our investigations, our politics, a lot of domestic stuff going on. And Mexico has sort of taken a back seat. And I'm not sure that that's a good idea, because some of these problems in Mexico, if we don't keep our eye on these problems, Alan, they could come back to bite us in very bad ways. I mean, the violence, the immigration problems, Central America. Mexico has sort of become the way to get into the United States from Central America. So there's just a lot of these, you know, there's a lot of problems south of the border, and right now they're not on the front page, Alan.
Right. You mean in the U.S. media, there's just not a lot of emphasis. It's kind of funny because, you know, there's certain things that are talked about a lot during the campaign, the election. And then after Trump took office, it's almost like you have new issues that weren't even on the front burner, you know. And it seems like the media, that there's a limit to how much they can focus on. You know, there'd be several topics, and they just don't go much beyond that, it seems like. But there's plenty going on in Mexico. There's a lot going on.
Absolutely, and we're going to run through a few of those problems in a minute, but I think you raise a very good point about the media. This is a criticism that I've always had of the American media, or much of it, is that they only seem to focus on Mexico when we're talking about illegal immigration. It's a problem the Democrats also have, by the way. They don't
seem to
want to talk about Mexico, for example, beyond that. Somehow it's not important or not as important. But when it comes to when we're talking about illegal immigration, then yes, Mexico is topic number one, or at least for many of them. And that's something that I feel is missing the point when it comes to Mexico, because I think there's lots of other problems, Alan, and we can start with, not necessarily the most important one, but the most recent one, an article that just came out today saying that the month of May was the most violent month on record. I mean, this is incredible, Alan.
Yes, and that's really bad news because, you know, every year I read all these statistics. They come out, they try to analyze the previous year, and there were a few years there where it seemed like it was getting better. And now, even the government has, last year in 2016, said that it was getting worse. The murder rate rose in 2016, and now, you know, we get up to May of 2017, and you got this, you know, horrible statistics of May. So, you know, I mean, it's not a good trend for anybody.
Right. A couple of things that I found interesting in this latest report about violence. Number one, the numbers are incredible. But also where the violence is occurring is also interesting. Sinaloa, and we've talked about that before. But the other place is Guerrero. Now, as I mentioned in my post that will be coming out later, Guerrero is where Acapulco is. So it's not like, it's not like, you know, this is in the middle of nowhere. A lot of Americans go to Acapulco. A lot of foreigners go to Acapulco. Acapulco is an attraction for many people. I've been to Acapulco several times. It's actually a very nice beach. But not far from it, you got some shootings going on, Alan.
Oh, yes. And it looks like, you know, the stats, other states have gone up, even some that, like Quintana Roo, Quintana Roo had a pretty good rating, but it's really gone up. 89%, it said. That's very significant.
Amazing. That's almost twice as much. Another interesting thing, too, and this happened last year when statistics came out, or some bad numbers came out. One of the things that the Mexican government automatically does is they'll say, well, it's not all terrorism. It's not all cartels, which I know what they're trying to do. They don't want to scare American tourists, and I can appreciate that. But what difference does it make? It's still violence. I mean, it's still shootings going on. And my guess is that most of it is cartel-related, because I lived in Mexico at a time when stuff like this didn't happen. Not to these numbers, Alan.
Right, yes.
The Mexican government is very sensitive, and I can understand why, as I say, because of tourism. But that doesn't overlook the fact that there's a lot of violence, and this violence just seems to... It's often very graphic and very brutal. The number of journalists who've been killed is amazing. It's not a good time. And one of the things that I argue in my, or I suggest in my post, is that maybe it's time to reactivate or re-energize the Mérida initiative that President Bush and President Calderón agreed to in 2007. Maybe it's time to take it to another level, just to show Mexico that we understand what they're going through, Alan.
Yeah, that was 10 years ago, so it's really a different situation now. That I guess that would be up to Trump, though, what he decides to do about that, or if he wants to emphasize that.
Well, it would be, but if one would think that he'd be just as interested as anybody else in at least holding down some of the violence down there. Another big issue, of course, is somewhat related to the violence, is Central America. President Peña Nieto was down in Central America recently. Not sure what he was doing down there, but he was visiting some countries. Maybe it was just a routine diplomatic visit. But right now, the violence is also happening in El Salvador, and Mexico is really becoming the avenue to the United States, Alan.
Oh, yes. And that's a big problem because I've read that Mexico is cracking down more on the illegal aliens from Central America, you know, because previously the government didn't really care that much as long as they didn't stay. But if the United States gets a tighter border, then you might have a lot of people staying in Mexico, and they don't really want that. And so they've been immigration agents in Mexico have actually been carrying out raids in bus stations. And you know how many people travel through Mexico on buses. And so there have been a lot of illegal aliens picked up in bus stations now.
Right. There's also, and I don't have the data on this, maybe you do, information that some of these people are not just from Mexico or Central America, people coming across the border. They're coming from other places as well, Alan.
Oh, definitely. Yes, I've read of that, and including Africa, the Middle East, Asia. I mean, there's a lot. There's people from many parts of the world passing through.
Yes. Another issue that this is more political issue is the question of trade. Recently, Mexico and the United States settled a dispute over sugar, which caught me by surprise because I thought that's why NAFTA had been put in place 23 years ago. So yeah, I mean, I couldn't understand why are we having a trade dispute in the 23rd anniversary of NAFTA. I couldn't figure that out. But apparently, it's those of us who understand Mexico, just like you do, you understand that there are certain protected industries, and sugar is apparently one of them. They have a very strong labor union, a lot of control over the government, but Mexico was forced to make some concessions, as I understand, to bring that sugar to the United States. But it's supposedly setting it up for the negotiations with NAFTA or about NAFTA. Are you hearing anything about that down in Mexico? What's going on with NAFTA and what Mexico may be expecting, Alan?
Well, they keep talking about, you know, in the media, they keep talking about that these negotiations are going to begin soon, and they'll make comments about it and this, that, and the other. I just wonder, once you get started on that, what direction it would take, because we know that President Trump has always been a critic of NAFTA, but if you renegotiate with Mexico and Canada, you know that they may have things that they want to change too. So I would be a little more, move a little slower on that. You know, I would not make drastic changes to it without really thinking through the things, because a lot of these products, you know, as we know, like the cars that are constructed in Mexico, they have parts that come from the United States. Some of these parts will pass across the border several times. So it could have a lot of effects, you know, in anything that they do with NAFTA.
Right. Well, as you know, we've spoken before about this. I've always been a little bit like you. I've been very cautious about NAFTA because I don't think NAFTA has been that bad of a deal for the United States, certainly not Texas. I mean, Texas is
right.
Real NAFTA happy. And so I have always felt that you know, I was a critic of then Senator Obama in 2008 when he said he wanted to renegotiate NAFTA, and I was skeptical of candidate Donald Trump when he said he wanted to renegotiate NAFTA, because I actually believe that this NAFTA thing has been blown out of proportion. We're not really it's being made out to be like, oh, they're taking advantage of us. I don't really see it that way. Now, could it improve? Could it be better? I suppose anything is a subject to improvement. But I've never felt that NAFTA was that bad of a deal for the United States, Alan.
Right. I feel like that Donald Trump has exaggerated looking, you know, from his perspective on that. And like in the agricultural industry, it's very popular among exporters, because we export a lot of corn, for example, to Mexico, and a lot of the agricultural people are worried that we might lose that market. You would not want to lose that market there, and a lot of our agricultural products are exported to Mexico. I realize maybe there's a downside to that for Mexican farmers too. That's the problem. You try to find the winners and losers in three different countries, and you're going to have a lot of conflict, especially if you start opening up everything for renegotiation.
Right. Well, for example, with Canada, we've had troubles, disputes over lumber products.
Right.
Because
lumber,
Canada has a huge lumber industry. I know that at one time the Canadians were very angry with something called the Byrd Amendment, that was part of certain legislation, and that was intended to protect American lumber makers or manufacturers. With Mexico, you make a very good point, because I have found, in just staying on top of the news here lately, that there's actually more criticism of NAFTA. NAFTA is probably more unpopular in Mexico than it is in the United States, Alan. I've come to that conclusion.
Yes, yeah.
When you get into some of these farmers, I mean, farmers in Mexico hate it.
Oh, yes. And there was a lot of controversy, especially, you know, in the earlier phases. A lot of the farmers in Mexico really hated it, and because you can see their point, too. It's hard for them to compete with American agribusiness. So there was a lot of controversy over that until, you know, it phased in more. There were certain phases that it went through, and so there's a lot to look, and that's just in agriculture. I mean, and just in agriculture alone, there's so many issues, and then if you look at everything, all the exportations and manufacturing products, and like the lumber, and there's just so much. It's such a broad topic, so we have to
take it,
you know, very cautiously.
Well, it's also 23 years old. And
that's right.
You know, anything that is 23 years old probably could use, you know, a little tinkering or adjustment. Mexico is a much different country today than it was in 1994 when NAFTA went into effect. I don't, you know, if you remember Mexico in 1994, if you go to a place like Querétaro or San Luis Potosí or places like that, I mean, it's like like a whole new city has grown because of NAFTA, and to some extent because of foreign investment. So I think that a revision is not a bad idea, but it should be done from a positive standpoint of saying, let's make it better, rather than, you know, we're being taken advantage of. I just never really supported that approach by President Trump. It just didn't make any sense to me. Because I never felt NAFTA was that big of a deal in the United States, Alan. I don't ever remember NAFTA being that big of a campaign issue before, until President Trump made it, Alan.
That's right. That's right. Not a major issue. There are certain sectors have, you know, disputes with it, but really, is a major campaign issue? No.
Yeah, I never felt that it was either. Talk to us a little bit about your last article. You talked about the elections. There are four states that had election: Veracruz, Nayarit, Coahuila. Of course, Coahuila is right up here on the border.
Yes.
And that's been a pretty violent place too. And the state of Mexico,
yes.
of course, which is surrounding the capital of Mexico City there. And people may not realize, but the state of Mexico is a huge political powerhouse. In
oh,
Mexico,
yes.
In fact, the current president of Mexico, Peña Nieto, came from as governor of what they call the Estado de México. So take a few minutes and talk about those elections and your thoughts about it.
Well, I think it's always interesting to see what's going on in Mexico at the state level, you know, because it's not always the same as what's going on nationally. And we had these four states that had elections some for local government, some for the legislature, some for the governorship, and it's very interesting if you break it down, all the parties that are involved, because you have, you know, there's so many political parties in Mexico, and then at the state level you even have other parties, and they have all these bizarre coalitions, and they have all these party coalitions. And it's funny, you might have two parties, they're coalitions in one state, but they're coalition partners in one state, but in another state, they're running against each other. And it's just bizarre when you look at it. And it's but you have these four states, a lot of controversy about the elections too, and recounting of votes. Of course, in Coahuila, they're still going over it, and the coalition that didn't win, it was very close, but the coalition didn't win is still contesting the election. And of course, in the state of Mexico, which has the biggest population in Mexico, you know, if Mexico had an electoral system, they would have more electoral votes than any other state. And they a lot of people looked at that election, the state election, as a somewhat of a bellwether for the national election next year. And that was there was a lot of controversy about that one too, but
right.
The PRI wound up, you know, winning that one.
Right, and the state of
also,
Mexico, as you say, is very interesting because if the state of Mexico was a country, I think it would be the biggest country between Mexico and Colombia or something like that. I mean, be bigger than any of the Central American republics, bigger than Ecuador.
Oh yes.
I mean,
right.
It's a huge. It's also a very interesting. The demographics of the state are also very interesting because you have residential areas, suburban type areas.
Right.
A lot of the middle class lives in those areas, and you have also a lot of industry. So the governor of the state of Mexico, I used to hear that the most powerful person in Mexico was the president. The second most powerful was the mayor of Mexico City, and the third was the governor of the state of Mexico. So there you have, within a few miles of each other, the three most powerful people in the country. And that, of course, is interesting, but it also, I'm sure, must frustrate the heck out of people who live in other states who probably don't get any attention, Alan.
Yes, that's true. And it's like when you drive or ride a bus into Mexico City, long before you ever get to the actual border of the Distrito Federal, you're already in the urban area, which is part of the state of Mexico. It spills all over. It's just immense. And, you know, like when you drive through or ride through and you see all those apartment complexes and all the houses, it's just enormous. And of course, you know, the PRI has it's a stronghold of the PRI. Although in the Distrito Federal, it's now a stronghold of the PRD, you know, and so it's pretty amazing to see, you know, all these differences here, and now you have the Morena Party, which is the new party founded by AMLO, López Obrador, and they really wanted to win that state of Mexico, didn't quite make it. But
right.
they did very well for a new party, actually.
Well, I think it's sometimes I find it very amusing that Mexico in a generation has gone from a country where one party was all that mattered to a situation now where you have so many parties, like you say, that before one party, at least one party had the first and last word on everything. Now you have
right.
so many parties that I'm beginning to wonder if maybe they have too many. Maybe they've gone from one extreme to the other, because it is very difficult to govern when you have to constantly form coalitions. It may not be the most efficient way to govern, I don't think. But, you know, maybe it looks different down there, but that's what it looks like up here, that it's just very difficult to get anything done. And these recounts, I'm sure, don't make life any easier, because if we learned anything about the recount here in the United States between Gore and Bush, or the recount in Mexico between Calderon and López Obrador in 2006, nobody is ever really happy after a recount. I mean, they get settled legally, but people have grudges for a long time, Alan.
Oh, yes, that's right. And sometimes the losing party never accepts its defeat, and they never recognize the legitimacy of the other party. And as for all those parties, you know, there's so many parties. I think one reason is if they get a certain percentage of the vote, they get government money. So they have even these small parties, if they just get, you know, several percentage points of the vote, they're supported by the government. And so you got all these parties and even these little parties, and then you have all these bizarre coalitions in different states and different municipal areas. It's so complicated, and these parties, you know. And then, of course, you had AMLO, who departed from the PRD and just started his own party. And actually, it's done very well.
That's right. Well, the wisdom of the founding fathers who created the Electoral College. Because, I mean, the United States has two major political parties. And I think a lot of it has to do with the Electoral College, because you don't really win anything unless you win a state. And as Ross Perot learned in 1992, he got 19% of the vote, but he got nothing.
But no electoral votes.
He couldn't get a single state. Just very quickly here at the end, we got a couple of minutes, and I just wanted to get your reaction. You're going down apparently later this summer, so we'll chat when you come back. But I'm anxious to know about the elections coming up. They're going to have presidential elections July of 2018, so it's actually coming up pretty quickly here in less than a year. Is there any particular candidate that you hear is a favorite to win, or has a good name or a good reputation or a good campaign?
Well,
if nothing else, Alan?
The polls show López Obrador winning. You know, I mean, a lot could happen this year, but he's winning the polls, and he seems to have a lot of momentum. And it's going to be interesting, because you've got, you know, of course, you've got Margarita Zavala, you know, the former first lady. She seems to be the favorite for the pawn, and we'll see, you know, how that turns out. And then Osorio Chong, who's the interior minister, seems to be the pre-favorite. And then Mancera of the PRD seems to be the favorite. But, you know, a lot could happen. There's actually a number of independent candidates that would like to run. So it's going to – but it seems to me that old López Obrador has the momentum right now. He seems very confident. He seems like he's traveling all over the place, and – his party's done well in these other elections, even though it's just a few years old. And now I heard him, the latest thing I heard him say is he doesn't even think he'll run as a coalition partner with the PRD. He's so confident that his party can do well on its own. So I think he's definitely the man to beat.
Yeah, right now I think you're right. I'm anxious, like you say, it's still early. We're about roughly a year away from the election, I guess, would be the first Sunday in July, so we're roughly a year away, about 12 and a half months away. But I'm anxious to hear about this when you get back, because I'm sure you'll have a little bit more of a feeling for what's going on down there. But you know, he definitely would be a very strong candidate. I mean, he's already run before. He put up a great fight. But no matter who wins, and this is, I think, my concern, okay, I think no matter who wins, it's probably going to be somebody who will get between 35% and 37% of the vote, because they're going to have so many candidates. And if you look at just the last few presidents, going back to even Vicente Fox, Felipe Calderon, Peña Nieto, and this new one, they haven't had a president get 40 or 45% of the vote in quite some time. And I think that makes it difficult to govern. I really do, because it would be better if you had two strong candidates so that you would have somebody potentially winning a majority of the popular vote. And that's not going to happen this time, and I think that makes it difficult to govern.
But it really does.
Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead and finish.
Yeah, now, of course, if they had a electoral system like ours, it would be different, or a parliamentary system, it would be different. But the way they do it, you only need a plurality. So you could just barely have a few points more than the runner-up, and you win the election with, 35% of the vote. And now some people have suggested having a French-style two-round election. They had the first round, and then they take the top two candidates if nobody gets a majority, and the second round is maybe 2 weeks later, and it's just those two candidates. That's it. But, of course, that would be very hard to change their system, this quickly.
Well, and then that's right. And as we saw in France, that worked in France to elect Macron to a big victory.
Right.
But I'm not sure that all of those parties this is too many parties. I think that's the point I'm making. Too many parties, and I just think that makes it difficult to get anything done. And the problems of the country are also structural, like PEMEX and labor legislation and so on. And those kinds of problems are often difficult for politicians to fix because they take a lot of courage. Now, I will say this, one last thing about López Obrador. I actually think that if he were to win, he may be, because he's from the left, he may be the one who actually can fix PEMEX, because he might be able to convince the unions and Mexicans in general that PEMEX is unsustainable, something that maybe somebody from the right couldn't do. So maybe that's wishful thinking. Maybe it's wishful thinking on my part, but it might work.
Yeah.
It might work.
He might have the street cred to do that, yeah.
Well, somebody's got to fix PEMEX. I'll just put it that way, because that's a real problem for the country in so many ways. Well, Alan, as always, our time flies, but I want to thank you for your time, and I'm looking forward to your report when you go down to Mexico, and you can tell us about what's going on down there. I'm looking forward to chatting with you when you come back. In the meantime, have a great summer. You and your family have a great summer, and we'll chat very soon.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so
Bye.
Much. Alan Wall, and as I mentioned, we have a link to his website on the show information. If you click on that, it'll take you to the website. Alan actually has two. He has his own website, and then he also is a contributor at mexidata.info. But he puts it all together in alanwall.info so that you can go to one place and read his material. He writes about a lot of different things. That's why he does that, but Mexidata Info is where he writes most of the stuff about Mexico, like this last article that he wrote about the elections in these four states in Mexico. As I mentioned, I have a post coming out, hopefully Friday, about Mexico, where I talk about the situation in Mexico. I believe that we have to always be very alert and pay a lot of attention to Mexico, because there are some problems down there with the violence and the corruption and just the proximity. And then you've got Central America to the south of Mexico, where they're also having some serious problems. And if we don't keep an eye on it, these problems could be across the border rather quickly. We've seen that before. We saw that with the children a couple of years ago, when all of a sudden we had 40,000 kids on the border. So this is serious. And I know we've got a lot of other issues, and I know there's a lot of other stuff on our plate, and maybe some of it is more important for most Americans, and I can certainly understand that. But having been, having followed Mexico for quite some time, I've always felt that we have to keep an eye on Mexico, because what happens down there will ultimately find its way up here, especially if it's about violence and a lot of other things. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.